Greetings, everybody. It is a new episode of the Wind Up podcast, and I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and we are doing this live from the road. Greetings from glorious Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, everybody. Depending on how good the internet is here at the hotel we're staying at in downtown Pittsburgh, this video is and podcast is likely coming to you live either late Wednesday evening or first thing on Thursday. This travel day took a little bit longer than expected, but here we are. We made it. We're officially on the East Coast. I've had a Yingling and a Smash Burger, and I think we're ready to rock and roll for a couple of events before we get into the weekend. This week, we're going to continue talking about kind of the hot topic that's come up, a couple of hot topics that have come up, but kind of shift the focus from winemaking and the consultants to really how wineries disseminate this kind of information to you, the consumer, because there was some folks that we had out to the winery last weekend, last Saturday. So much fun because we are talking just really the wine business, but also the kind of manufacturing and production of wine. Before we get too far into it, I do have a couple of announcements. First and foremost, for those of you that have bought tickets to our Dallas event as well as our Chicago events, thank you so much. Super excited to have those come to fruition later this month. They are sold out. We do still have some tickets available in Salt Lake City. That's one of my connecting flights at some point this month. We're not coming to Salt Lake City. Unfortunately, Utah, you got to figure some shit out before we start slinging wine in Utah. But we are going to be in Kansas City, and we are also going to be in St. Louis. We still have tickets available to both of those. You can head to our website, mtgawines.com, and find out more information on both of those events. We do have wait lists going for both Chicago and Dallas. If you are interested in attending, you can contact us through our website, and we will put you on that list and try and get you in if we can. Those events sold out within like a couple of days, but we'll try and make it happen. Or we'll be back. Don't worry. We'll make it back to town. Those of you that have been continuing to follow, to share, and listen to the podcast, I cannot thank you enough. This has been just, again, a huge amount of fun. The support's been amazing. Just a quick reminder that if you do have that moment to leave a little review or rating wherever you're consuming the podcast, that would be hugely helpful. And be sure to subscribe to all of our social networks at MTGA Wines on YouTube, The Book of Face, the social network formerly known as Twitter, and Instagram. You can find us on all four of those. Whew. Business concluded. Now let's get into the heart of the matter, shall we? You know, this was something that I thought about actually a lot on the plane ride out here, because you got 4.5 hours to kill. I was banging out a lot of just kind of admin work and things, but there was a question that was asked at the winery. And this is something that I'd normally try and throw into our Q&A episode, which happened last week at the end of March. And normally I would save something like this as kind of good fodder for the end of April. But this is something that has truly been kind of at the heart of a lot of conversations we've had. And this goes back to really the first couple of months of doing the podcast and talking about additives to wine, to sugar content in wine, and why none of this is disclosed to you, the consumer. And it just so happened that I was working on our website on this flight, burned some miles to connect to the Wi-Fi, and I utilized that time to start putting together and almost finish up a couple of new web pages on our site that really dive further into this. And it's been front of mind for a long time, and the question was asked this last weekend. And I'm paraphrasing, but this is pretty close. Why is it that wineries don't disclose what they use when they're making wine? I mean, it's a perfect question. You know, it was quickly followed up by, like, why won't wineries disclose how much sugar is in their wine? And I sat there across from this gal with another gentleman who's in the industry and two MBA students. You know who you are if you're listening. And so we were talking a lot of business, a lot of a lot of kind of like really geeky business details and Napa in particular, and also just the broader wine industry and all. It was a great conversation, but this was a very poignant one, very poignant part of it. And frankly, the long and short of it is the wine industry doesn't have to. The more complicated answer, and this is something that blew her mind, actually. I think this is really interesting and something that I think many people need to realize, is that those of us in the alcohol industry, in the wine industry, we're not regulated by the FDA. The Food and Drug Administration has nothing to do with what we create. We're regulated by the Trade Tax Bureau, formerly known as the ATF. You're going to have to try and keep up with the government agency acronyms here. It's a pain in the ass, but it's what we deal with. But since we're not regulated by the Food and Drug Agency, Administration, whatever it is, and we're regulated by this other agency that has nothing to do with ingredients and what's going into things, they're purely concerned with the tax dollars and revenue of, you know, these alcoholic products that are being created. We can kind of do whatever we want. It's a little bit of the Wild West. There is a certain level of reporting and taxes and things that we have to provide to them and that we have to report to the state and federal government. But it has nothing to do with ingredients. It has nothing to do with sugar content or calories. And that is something that I think more and more people are waking up to. And this gal, you know, it was kind of the, we were talking about sugar content in particular because she tries to practice keto as a diet, or the Atkins diet, you know, kind of low sugar, high protein, which I, you know, flat out told her. I was like, well, all of our wines are technically sugar free as defined by the FDA, even though we don't have to play by those rules. And actually, they go way past that point. Very typically, it's a very, I mean, it's not even a measurable amount of sugar, realistically, that's in a lot of our wines. The lab reports come back and it's like, oh, it's less than this 0.0 or point, you know, whatever amount. So you're getting in a glass of wine, you know, 0.01 gram of sugar, if anything at all, which is always our goal, kind of year in and year out. But for many, and we talked a lot about some of the big names in the room, and I know there's a lot of you out there that want me to talk that shit and kind of, you know, expose a lot of this and who these players are. That's something that I probably can't do without getting sued, so we're going to hold off on that for now. But sugar is the common denominator. That it's not uncommon for commercially made wines to have more than their fair share of sugar in them, which obviously there's an issue in this country in regards to sugar consumption. Different conversation for a different day in terms of the broad stroke that is. But it is a way to make wines sexy and approachable, and that sweetness goes a long way in terms of mass production, whether it's in food or beverage. This isn't something that's exclusive to the wine industry. This happens all over, whether you're talking, cereals, fruit juices, candy bars, fast food. This is something that is ubiquitous in all these industries. So wine, however, it finds this unique little niche of like, oh, it's this drink of luxury and like royalty, and it's these farmers that are handcrafting these things. And the reality is that that can be true, but it can be equally true that these are producers that are selling snake oil and are happy to do it to the highest bidder for as much margin as they can because they're just cashing in on it. That's a little bit of cynicism in there, but realistically, that's the reality. Now, back to her question, why don't wineries do this? And I think it's more complicated than we don't have to, right? I think that there are more producers now talking about this. There are more people like myself trying to explain this to folks and give you kind of the view behind the curtain of, you know, of this situation and what some of us do in our winemaking, and probably more specifically, what we don't do in our winemaking. And I think, actually, you know, in thinking about this as I was putting together this website and considering, you know, how I was going to kind of present this yet again on the show. It came down to an interesting kind of sociological phenomenon. And I believe this is something I mentioned in one of the additive shows that we did last year. You can go back and listen to those, and we discuss some of the additives that are more commonly used. Actually, my honest opinion about some of them as well, because I think there are some that are fine. You know, I think there are others that are not great and bad. And there's distinctions to be made between all those different layers. But there was an interesting case study, and I'm probably going to butcher some of this. This is, goes back to my lovely college degree, which most of it has escaped my brain at this point. But this was one of the things that fascinated me, is that apparently it's a famous story in New York City. Some of you might know this story. And it was a lady who was being mugged and I think, unfortunately, stabbed in like an alleyway in New York. And, you know, people in the neighboring apartment buildings hear the commotion, her screaming, the mugger, you know, trying to take whatever he's taken from her. And the interesting thing is that you probably had dozens of eyes seeing this happen, hearing her cries for help. And the interesting thing was, of those dozens of eyes, all those bystanders looking on, no one called the authorities. No one tried to help. And they came up with a term called the diffusion, or a phrase called the diffusion of responsibility. And the assumption was that, oh, all these other people are here. I don't have to do anything. I saw that person. They were already here. They probably did something. Or that person probably did something. The buck gets passed to somebody else. Because there's many people present, obviously, something. Someone's done something. Like, no one's just going to let this happen. I believe in my fellow neighbors. They probably took care of it already, so I don't have to do anything. It was crazy because this actually even happened in the airport. We were going through, San Francisco Airport today. And we're walking down towards our gate. And there's a gentleman kind of kneeling in the walkway. And it looks like there's someone, like, sitting in front of him. And we get a little closer. He takes off his bag, puts it on the ground, kind of gets back on the ground, like looks a little panicked. Someone comes over, sees what's going on. They go back to the restaurant or bar they're right next to. They talk to the bartender. Two more people kind of show up, and the group kind of grows. And it's some gal who, from the sound of it, from what he said, he's like, oh, she twisted her knee. Like, this girl's, like, hurt. Like, she's twisted her knee, like, stepped wrong or dropped her bag or tripped over it. Like, we didn't see what happened, but she's on the ground, like, shaking, crying. And you saw it happen. You saw this happen where you saw people who were honestly concerned and, you know, were talking and trying to figure out someone who went to someone in some position of authority and said, hey, you need to call somebody, someone's hurt. And you looked over and you saw someone on the phone, you know, getting a hold of somebody to come and help. But you saw everybody else just walking by. You know, some people on their phone just not paying attention, you know. But a lot of people looking over like, oh, that's weird, and just they keep going. And, you know, you probably aren't going to expect everybody to stop. Right, you got, you know, 100 people right there. There's probably some people that aren't paying attention. There's probably going to be some people that see the crowd and like, oh, someone's taking care of it. But it was, you know, stopping and making sure, like, hey, is she okay? She's like, oh, I twisted her legs. Like, she's not doing too hot. Did someone call somebody? Yes, they talked to her. You look over, they're on the phone. You're like, okay, like, it's being handled. You know, people are taking care of this. As opposed to just seeing someone laying in the middle of a walkway, you know, in pain and not doing anything about it. So it was luckily the opposite happened compared to this case study in this alleyway in New York, right? So the reason why I bring up this diffusion of responsibility idea is because I think that's where many wineries find themselves, is they don't have to. And we kind of talk, and many will talk a big game of like, oh, we're low impact. Oh, we're a natural wine. Oh, we're actually the natural wines tell you about what they're doing, but they actually make wines that are not good for you. because they're spoiling. And, you know, they figure, all right, well, you know, if all these other brands aren't doing it, or maybe someone is, and maybe if we just talk about it, it's okay. You know, we don't need to put anything on our labels. We don't need to put anything on our website. Like, it's all right. Like, we don't need to do it, so it's fine. And the buck kind of gets passed in some way, shape, or form. There's some sort of rationalization that happens where these businesses just actively decide that they're not the ones that are responsible. This is everybody, you know. If everybody's doing this, is everybody wrong? And I would say yes. I think there are more and more small producers and even large producers that are trying to be more transparent. I think some are doing a better job than others. But I think that this is a huge issue that will come to a head in some way, shape, or form, whether that's further government regulation and the posting of calorie counts and sugar content and, you know, a different form of regulation in that sense, or at least access to this information. I think some of us can remember the fight that was had between the fast food industry and like the table of contents and like knowing like how many calories are like in a burger, right? I mean, I remember like that was not posted anywhere in those restaurants. You couldn't find a table of contents. You couldn't find ingredients in anything. You know, there was a legal battle to be had. They're like, hey, like this needs to be posted. Like customers need to have access to this kind of information. And I think wine has been slow on the uptake, one, because of, you know, who we're regulated by. It's not required of us in any way, shape, or form. Because of that, people say, oh, well, it's not that big of a deal. And there's an assumption that, oh, wine's just made with grapes, maybe a little bit of yeast. The sulfites might be the biggest thing you have to worry about. And that's just not the case. You know, there's a lot of other stuff going on in wine. Especially at a large scale, you know, but even small producers are guilty of this as well. You know, it's easy to say, oh, the big guys are the ones doing a disservice. You know, it's easy to blame them. Easy scapegoat. But there are plenty of small producers that do this same nonsense. And that's a shame because you don't have to, you know. But it's been so ingrained within the industry of like, oh, no, this is just, these are the tools you have available. And no, you don't have to report on it. No, you don't have to tell anybody. You can just sweep that under the rug and no one will be the wiser. As long as people drink the wine and buy it, doesn't matter. And I think that's just a damn shame. And I felt, honestly, I felt bad answering this question in that way to her because you saw someone as a consumer who was genuinely curious and interested and was trying to live her life a certain way in terms of what she ate and drank and did not have access to that information. And frankly, couldn't get it because most wineries, you can't just call them and be like, hey, what's the sugar content in your wines? And realistically, who in this day and age is making that phone call, right? So there's this barrier to access. One, because consumers don't know what to ask. And two, because producers are unwilling to share. And at some point, there's going to be some, you know, one of those dams is going to break. And I think it's going to be the consumer side. I think the industry is going to be resistant to this kind of change. But at a certain point, it's our responsibility to share this kind of information. And it's still surprising to me that so many people are unwilling to do so. So as I'm sitting on this flight, putting together this website, you know, disclosing all of this information and hitting publish and getting it out there, you're welcome to check it out. You can go to mtgawines.com. If you scroll down the homepage, you'll see a little heading that is our wines by the numbers. It's on there. You can start going through it and see kind of what I'm talking about here. It is fairly brief, the information on each wine, but hopefully useful to people who are interested in that kind of stuff. On all of our bottles moving forward, starting with the 2020, 2023 vintage, every bottle from here on out will have a QR code that goes to that webpage so that it's easy to access that information. So that whether it's someone in a wine shop or a restaurant or just yourself at home, and you're like, oh, I want to know what Mike did to this wine, how it was made, we can share that with you. And you know, I'm terrible at, you know, kind of doing the toot toot beep beep of my own horn. I don't like bragging or talking about myself or even our business, but I think this is something that is very important to share with people, whether it's just the handful of you that listen to the show, and sharing this with more individuals who are truly interested in wine and want more information, that feel as though they're kind of lost in the dark about what wine is and how it's made and some of the considerations that are taken by us as winemakers and wine producers, and maybe some of the questions that you should be asking of the wineries you love to consume. You know, at a certain point, and this is, I said as much in the additive conversations we had last year's shows, that I still love a Big Mac from time to time. Man, they're good. But I know full well that when I eat that burger, I'm probably not going to feel that great afterwards. I'm probably not getting a very nutrient-dense meal, but it tastes good. And if I maybe imbibe a little bit too much wine the night before, and I'm a little hungover, and I just want something kind of greasy and crappy, that fits the bill. Actually, typically, to be fair, I'm more of a Crunchwrap Supreme kind of guy, but, you know, still every once in a while, Big Mac will fix what ails you, it feels like, you know. So there is a certain, you know, range to this. It's not like, oh, these producers are bad for having sugar in their wine. Oh, these producers are bad for using these additives or these enzymes, or this tannin powder or this oak extract. They're not bad for doing that. You might be able to argue that they're being a little disingenuous, depending on how they're marketing that wine. But it's no different than that Big Mac that's pumped full of, you know, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, there is balance to be had in this conversation. If you don't mind drinking Mega Purple grape juice, look it up. We'll talk, or go back and even better, listen to that additive episode that we posted last year. You know, that's fine. That's fine. If you like sweeter wines, that's fine. You know, there are certain, when folks come out and visit us and, you know, I typically ask like, hey, you know, what wines are you normally into? Or is it more reds, more whites, a little bit of both? Do you like big reds? Do you like lighter reds? I try and get a feel for, you know, where people are at in terms of their wine drinking, to try and kind of guide the experience a little bit. And there are a handful of brand names that when they list those, they're not going to like. I know they're probably not going to like any of our wines because I'm like, oh, you like sugar. Oh, that's right. You like sugar. And at that point, luckily, I've kind of crafted a pretty good way of tiptoeing through those tulips and guiding people on that journey of like, oh, here's the difference in our production styles and what is done with those wines versus what we do and so on and such as and so forth, the South Africa's and whatnot. Big shout out to that like Miss USA or Miss Universe thing that happened a while back. That was hilarious. It's been a while since I've watched that clip. This is all to say that I think it is coming down to a point where it is more so about providing the information, and what you decide to do with it is up to you. You know, there are definitely certain brands that I think it's silly for people to support, especially given what they think it is and their expectation of quality or complexity. I'm like, oh, that's just like, that's like Kool-Aid, man. That's exactly what that is. That's how that's made, basically. And that's why you're so hungover after drinking it, because it's heavily processed. There's a bunch of sugar in it. And it's not good, you know? And if you're going to be consuming something like alcohol that already, depending on who you ask, is, you know, not ideal to be consuming in large volumes, you should probably kind of consider what else is in it, right? all things in moderation, including moderation, right? So it behooves us to provide this information so that if you're asking those questions, we can answer them in a responsible manner. And that way, you as a consumer can consume responsibly. I think that is the end of the conversation. That is much that needs to be said. And those that continue to fight this are on the wrong side. My two cents. It was really a bummer to share that information, because I feel as though, you know, I share this with folks and I have this conversation probably on a weekly basis with people, if not every just couple of days. And it feels like I'm bursting people's bubble. It feels like I'm telling folks, don't, you know, when you go into your local wine shop, be wary. The sugary boogeyman's going to come and get you. Jump out at you from that shelf. It's not like that. Because when it comes down to it, if you like that wine and it makes you feel good, more power to you. I might, you know, if I razz you, it's because I like you. I'm like that with my friends. If you know, if I'm talking trash, you know we're good. The second I'm just kind of being, you know, taking a step back and be like, oh, that's cool, or not saying anything, that's when you know. That's when you know you're in trouble with me. Because I love talking that trash. I do. I really do. So I don't want this conversation, hopefully, to dissuade you from trying new wines, to being wary about going out there and buying stuff from your local, local places, supporting your local small businesses and wine shops and restaurants. But if you are truly curious and you are collecting wine or drinking wine on a regular basis, I do suggest that you start asking some of those questions and you start kind of figuring out where you want wine to fit in your life and how you want it to fit in terms of your health and well-being and how you feel. It's a question worth asking, especially if you consume it on anything like that on a regular basis. It's worth asking. You know, luckily our hotel is very kind of, and they left us like a little cheese plate. I'm like, you know, depending on the day, I'm pretty sure cheese is good for you. Some of these cured meats, maybe not so much. But man, they're good, especially after a travel day. Mm-hmm. That's some good stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to eat the whole cheese plate. Probably just most of it. So, it's interesting doing these shows on the road, because it does give me a lot of time to kind of take a step back, absorb a lot of the conversations that I've had over the last week, few weeks, and just so happened that there's kind of a snowball of events between this question being asked in the cellar, to seeing someone laying on an airport floor this morning, to getting this website and redoing our label artwork. And it all kind of culminated in sitting here in a hotel room in the Eastern Seaboard, just thinking about where this conversation goes from here. And I think it's an exciting one. I think it's a great one to be having, and hopefully provides value to not just yourselves in terms of your wine knowledge and understanding of some of the shenanigans that go on in this industry, but also for producers to understand that, hey, when you see something or someone in distress, it's okay to be the first one to call and not let that responsibility diffuse into the ether, right? Thank you so much for tuning in. I appreciate you, especially in this kind of weird setting. This is going to happen a few times over the course of the next few months as I'm on the road. Thank you all again for who are signed up for our events coming up. It's going to be a busy schedule. We're all over here between Pittsburgh and the Midwest. We're coming back to the East Coast, to New Jersey. We're going out to Des Moines. Kansas City, St. Louis. Can't wait to see you guys later on this month. Austin, Texas. Shoot, where else are we going? We're going everywhere. We're all over the place. So be sure to follow us on all of our socials, to make sure that you're up to date with all those events, when they're happening, where they're happening. So if you can attend, that you can join in on some of that fun. Hopefully we will see you out on the road or out in Napa at some point soon. If not, hopefully we will catch you here next time on the next Wind Up podcast. Cheers.